Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio and together partners at Amity Kett.
Hello, welcome back. Today we have David Betts with us. David, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm David from Benchmark Kitchen and Bath, and we know each other through several millwork packages from various clients, and through, I got the hat on, Brad from LBR Homes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Promotional materials. We're working together on a project right now, and the design oracles thought it would be really interesting to talk about one of our favorite subjects, which is cabinetry, cabinet design, millwork,
yep.
How cabinets are made.
I imagine it's a big sticker shock for a lot of people. It still surprises me how much some of these packages
cost. Yeah, it's usually, if you have a whole house, it can be around 10, 15, 20% of the cost of the build.
Right.
So, and we can get into all those different levels of why it would be that.
Well, also, it's a hugely important way, and I mean this, I'm not just saying this because you're here today with us, that it is a hugely important way to make a home feel customized. When we're doing a new build, it's how you add character and interest and function and a statement. And then when you're doing a renovation, same. But also just kind of, it's an interesting art form in how do you make the areas you're not maybe addressing and changing feel incorporated.
Sure.
How did you get into this field?
My first kind of taste of it was I worked at a furniture showroom in the very late 90s, and we did custom furniture. It was like the Pottery Barn era, and so our shop was knocking off Pottery Barn stuff and making their sofa style 4 inches longer or 4 inches shorter, and so we had places in LA that would make the stuff for us. But I really liked the design side of it, and the lady that was I worked under, I'm still friends with, but she just was like, David, your eye for detail. Like, that was always her thing, you know? But I made no money, and the owner of that place, I had to go. And so then I found my way, unfortunately, into retail furniture sales at places like Levitt's and Rooms to Go and Ashley Furniture.
Okay.
And, I couldn't.
No offense.
I kept. Well, to anyone who works in retail and wants to get out, just do whatever you can to make that happen. It's definitely.
It's a hard lifestyle.
It's soul sucking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like long periods of boredom, and then you have your up that comes in, and you have to chase this person around the showroom that does not want to be
chased.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did that, and a light bulb went off when 30 was around the corner, and I went and got a job as a cabinet maker's assistant after doing it for 6 or 7 years retail, in and out of college. I didn't have the math to do industrial design. That was what I wanted to do. I didn't I can't get through I'm not smart enough to do industrial, like the schooling to be an industrial designer, even though I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so now in a weird way, I've like taken the very long path to be being kind of a furniture designer. A version of industrial design.
Yeah, you definitely have an incredible eye for detail. So we really appreciate that in working with you.
A gift and a curse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet.
Right.
Do you walk around through people's houses when you
Not
go
anymore.
Out to dinner parties? And
I see things that I can't. I don't judge them, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. You've been able to compartmentalize that.
I went and used the restroom and noticed that the person who painted the walls in there didn't clean their roller. So there's all these little fuzzies.
It's not easy to beat you.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That is too
when you're in there next time, take a look at the walls and you'll see that. So I was making a decent income in retail and then got a job as a cabinet maker's apprentice making $11 an hour. And my wife and I had just gotten married, and it was just like, do it, you know, just figure it out.
Yeah, and then if you were happier doing it, right? Yeah.
And really enjoyed it and stayed with that operation for 5 years and then worked with another operation for a couple years and then was on my own.
Okay.
And it's been 8 years I've been on my own, 9 years.
So if we were at a dinner party and I just asked you to tell me, what are the kind of things to watch out for, the pitfalls? for, you know, I'm about to build a house. What you tell me the things I need to know, maybe the top five things I need to know about before I delve into this. Besides, you just mentioned dollar amount, sticker shock.
Yep.
Are there other sort of things that you want to make sure people understand?
Yeah, I think the function is the next biggest one. Mm-hmm. You know, try and like walk around your friends' houses and open houses and just get a feel for what you like mm-hmm. and you don't like. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I have three more. Do you have any other ones? Can you give me a clue?
Well, I'm just – that was, you know,
I think kind of... Well, I think, yeah, there's definitely the function, and then you start to also get into the detail and the style.
Right.
Like
– there's a timelessness.
Yes.
You know?
Oh,
everything's
yeah.
so mm-hmm. trendy, mm-hmm. and I don't think you're going to avoid it, you know. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to put something trendy in your house, you know, or you're going to have to deal with the consequences of – getting tired of this color in 5 years,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm. I usually tell people if something's really trendy, I just want you to know this is really trendy and I want to make sure you're okay with that because you might not like it soon. Or do you just love that so much it will be timeless for
right.
you?
So. Or design it in such a way that it could be yanked mm-hmm. or so, painted over.
So that's interesting. Do you have personally a favorite? I'd just be interested to know a favorite style or what do you watch out for? Because you're watching out for trend. I get that to a point. But what else? Is there something?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've gone through phases where I really got into super modern and was very envious of like, there's, have you been to Arity mm-hmm. in Austin?
Yeah.
Super high-end German mm-hmm. millwork. And I'm impressed by their finishes and how they do things and have tried to emulate that in our own work and have sold jobs by being like the air quote cheap Arity, you
yeah.
know,
oh, yeah.
getting in the door mm-hmm. that way. But then we're doing a lot of inset work now. And I'm getting back into like super into traditional stuff.
Right.
You know, we have one that we're installing right now. And every time we opened a box, the other few, like on Monday, it was like so exciting to see it and how good it looks, you know.
So that brings me to one of my favorite things that we talk about with clients is, you know, when we first introduce the concept that we're designing your cabinetry, your millwork, yeah. Your cabinets, what inset versus overlay?
There's a nomenclature thing that
let's
I find
talk
is
about
a little
that.
Weird here.
Yeah.
yeah. So a lot of builders call full overlay cabinets. That's what they're referring to European or frameless. But a lot of cabinet guys call full overlay a framed cabinet. And so the door is outside the frame, on top of the frame. If you just close your eyes and picture a flip house with white shaker cabinets, that's full overlay cabinetry. And the doors are on top of the cabinets, mm-hmm. not inside the frame.
Yep. So it's interesting because we'll ask clients sometimes to pull images of things that they like for cabinets. Mm-hmm. And then currently, and actually for quite a while now, they're always inset.
Yep.
Nobody's eye goes to the overlay. Always want the inset where the door is set inside the box.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a tight reveal around it. It's definitely more traditional, but it's transitional. Too, you know,
yeah,
it can kind of
I think
be both.
Yeah, the door style can make a difference whether or not.
Yeah,
and those are take a lot of finesse to get right. I mean, we just had one on another project, and it wasn't your cabinets, but somebody else's, and I was just, this did not. Turn
if you
out
don't
quite
install
well.
Them perfectly, you're kind of just screwed. Sometimes with European, the frameless stuff. So if anybody's wondering what we're talking about, I would just Google inset versus overlay versus. Frameless, mm-hmm. and there will be images of the three styles right next to each other.
Yeah, and that's when you get into, just not to get down a rabbit hole here, but in construction, the you know how the box is built to receive the door, and then the hinge, how the hinge works,
yep.
and clearances for opening and closing the doors, and interior space.
They almost always have some wiggle room, the hinges. And the drawer guides, everything has an adjustment in it,
okay.
unless you do the butt hinge, like a finial hinge mm-hmm. on inset. And then it has to be perfect.
And what is that exactly?
It's where you see the edge of the hinge, like on an interior door where there's that
like when you look from the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, or those 1970s.
Definitely more traditional.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or the 1970s ones.
The 70s cabinets.
Yeah.
yeah. So I love those. I
do you?
Love, not the 70s ones, but I love an exposed hinge.
She does.
They're more expensive, I have found.
Yep.
So all of these things, just to the audience out there, add cost. So that's why we're talking about them, because those are the things we have to educate our clients on.
Yep.
people think they look at an image of an inset door with a beautiful shaker panel door, and they say, I want that. It looks so simple. I want the simple one. It'll cost less.
Yeah. And we get a lot of emails where people send us their inspiration images and also on the other side are saying, I want this cheaply or as affordable as possible. And I'm like, well, find new inspiration images
because
you picked the most expensive pictures on Pinterest.
So give people hope. Like when someone is trying to save money, what do you recommend? Not that that's necessarily your approach, but
– be okay with the idea of IKEA or the idea of a full overlay framed cabinet and then try and do paint, a fun color, you know.
Mm-hmm. Pretty hardware.
Right.
Decorative cabinet hardware.
There are RTA cabinets that I still sell to my friends and people that are, air quote, have normal budgets.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my friend's kitchen for $3,000 and
– you're fired.
They're like –
Don't come on this show. I'm kidding.
Coville Cabinetry. Mm-hmm. They have a place in Anaheim, and they have one near Fort Worth. So you can go look them up. You need a builder to buy them, but they're like $100 a foot. Painted, very nice. It's like China just kicked
last?
Their ass.
They don't fall
They do.
Apart?
They have a baked-on finish, and I even took one of the extra doors and dumped acetone on it because that's my test.
Uh-huh.
It's nail polish remover. And a conversion varnish, we can talk about this. We can get back to this. But the finish is, it's like a two-part epoxy finish, but it's called a conversion varnish. And it's rock hard, you know.
Wow.
It's chemically resistant up to and including nail polish remover, which will just, you know, eat through almost anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's great. That's a wonderful thing to know. So let's talk about that. So the other thing, so we talked about sort of the, so it's when I first, I'm getting excited, when I get a new staff member in my, you know, one of my firms, I make sure that they get an education about how cabinets are made because it's one of my favorite things. So we'll do a tour.
Okay.
And they'll learn how the boxes are made. Mm-hmm. And then they'll learn that – but what they're often learning is how that particular company builds things.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about that, about how different companies build different things, like what's different from a box store and how you build, and wax poetic about that?
A lot of the cheaper cabinets are going to have a half-inch plywood side, and they're kind of stapled together. There's a joke about one brand that I won't name, but it's like, do you install the box it came in or the cabinet itself? Because they're that terrible, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like you could pick it up a foot and drop it on its corner, and it will just kind of unfold.
Oh,
you
wow.
know?
Wow.
The higher-end companies are using hidden, like, tenons. Dowels.
Mm-hmm.
They use like quick melt and quick dry polyurethane glues to keep the back solid. And Crystal in particular has.
And what's Crystal? Can you
Crystal
tell?
Is our kind of better premium brand where we can do all kinds of weird stuff like radius corners and custom veneers and reeded doors. And, you know, that's another trend that we could touch on.
Mm-hmm.
They have a machine that it knows how big the box is that's coming in. The guy in the factory will put the box together kind of loosely, and then it goes into this clamp that is a CNC, like, robotic clamp that sees the box, knows it it already knows what box is coming at it. It's like, this box is 34.5 tall and 21.5 wide, and it will feel the box and put an amount of pressure on it, and this glue that they put in it is dry in, like, 30 seconds. So this machine just, you know...
Wow.
Squeezes the crap out of the box.
That's amazing.
And then it shoots off down the line.
So the box is named Hal.
Right.
Keep an eye on it because it might
That's
hurt
right.
You.
Yep. Exactly.
The machine, I mean, yeah.
The machine.
Yeah. The machine.
AI. A factory tour of a cabinet shop would probably be a good thing for you.
Yeah.
Crystal got me so excited when they walked us around and wined us and dined us and seeing their 500 people and how they do everything. And so when I started, my kind of ethos for myself was like, I want to be good at whatever it is. I want to be good at installing. I want to be good at making it. Mm-hmm. I want to know how to do it hands-on. I didn't have an entrepreneurial mindset. I just thought, I need to know how to do this before I graduate to the next step. But was always looking at the super high-end market and telling myself, I can do this, you know?
Yeah.
I can do what they do. I poke around open houses and kind of peek into cabinets and see what they're doing and learn from that and from, you know, watching YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But my thing was, I need to figure this out before I move to the next step. So that was how ultimately I landed on selling cabinets. I got bored of making them. I got bored of like looking down the barrel of a table saw and just having dust thrown in my face. And then realizing that there's these big companies that are so good at it. Why don't I just go and let them do it and I'll buy it from them?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where we are now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And another eye-opener for me as a cabinet guy was most major metropolitans. I moved from Orange County about 5.5 years ago, but the same thing is in Austin. There are CNC fabricators that have edge banders, and an edge bander is only for frameless cabinets. So you have plywood or particle board, like box sides, and then if it's an oak cabinet, they will edge like a little thin veneer of oak on it. But there are people that will charge you, it's like $50 a sheet. This is how much it costs to cut up the sheet, and then it's 60 cents a foot to edge band it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know how to make a cabinet, you can just order the plywood from the plywood place. They deliver it. The parts cutter guy cuts it, and you put them together. And it's like you kind of do your own IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was on my own, I figured this out and found a fabricator in Orange County and just was so excited. Like, I don't have to do this anymore. I was edge banding my own cabinets. You can buy edge banding at the store, and you iron it on yourself with an iron from Target. and they sell little trimmers. And I did whole jobs this way when I was small because that was just, you know, I sold the job for $20,000 and it was like $1 million in my head. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll spend the weekend just ironing wood.
Wow. Okay.
So then what's the difference between that? And so for, you know, right now we're doing things just to move into kind of a little bit of trend. And like you were mentioning the reeded doors, or we're doing a lot of cane inset panels, or we do a lot of metal mesh, which is trendy, but it's also very historic and kind of old fashioned.
It harkens back. Yeah.
It does harken back. That is true. Or we're building cabinets that we're cladding in black laminate and making it look like it's from what's the big ship in Star Wars that that Darth Vader's lives on?
I don't know.
Thank you. The Death Star. This looks like it's from the Death Star, kind of black. And those are harder to do. People think they hear the word, you know, plastic laminate or, or,
there
are
but purveyors are of this that have very high-tech laser edge banders.
Uh-huh.
And there's a brand that we buy. It's called PE Laser. And they have the very nice black ultra matte. And
then they
have a bunch of other colors. But the tricky thing that you'll see, like our mid-level brand, Belmont, they have a black ultra matte. But the edge banding, when you get your face on it, is just not quite
right.
Mm-hmm. It's not quite nice. Mm-hmm. But this other company, like, that's all they do.
Yeah.
And so you just buy the panels from them.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that what you're talking about is so much in the realm of, you know, why I'm talking about, you know, I want people to understand how a cabinet is built and what a cabinet is, because it can be mysterious. But really, it's about understanding how things are constructed. And wood is not magic. It has to either be, you know, you can't, you know, the laminates, that the ironing on the frameless cabinets, how that's done. You know, once you understand that, you need to understand how it's built. That's where you start understanding what the labor is that's involved, and then of course the quality. So quality comes into play when you're. So what is a very high end cabinet for that's new? How is that built different than what you were describing? That's just assembled.
A lot of it comes down to customizing the finishes.
Okay.
You know, you can the Chinese RTA cabinets from Coville are not that much worse than a crystal cabinet as far as the construction. There's thicker box sides, and then they're glued and doweled. I still think cabinets are so insanely expensive, and I'm getting my head around that. There is a way to do it cost effectively. You know, IKEA is okay. The Chinese stuff is okay. And my argument for quality is that a lot of these hinges and guides are, you can replace them. You know, you can buy a few extra, and if something breaks, you can have it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And once the cabinet's screwed to the wall, it's not going anywhere. It's not like your IKEA dresser that your kids moved to college and fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Doesn't get moved in the same way.
Right. So it's just the durability of the hinges and the trash pullouts and things like that.
Right.
There are millwork companies that I've heard of that will fly clients out to like the Black Forest of Germany.
And I've heard
like,
of
this
those
is
people.
This is your tree.
Yeah.
We're going to cut it. We're going to veneer it, sequence match it.
They own the forest.
Yep.
They have for generations. And yep. they cut those trees down and it's built solid.
Lavish sells a solid wood cabinet.
And yes. I think
they're a couple thousand dollars a foot.
I have visited with that
yeah.
program. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I mean, there's a lot of customization that can happen with cabinets, and as you know, so we always will do drawings, and
yep.
we work with kind of first pass. We have, well, not first pass, but we have a couple meetings where we're going over cabinet elevations and discussing how they want their kitchen to be, their laundry room, and we have endless hours of discussion about all of those things because everybody is different. I mean, yesterday I had someone say, well, what's typical? I said nothing.
Right.
Everybody has an opinion about their laundry room and how they like to function and, you know, same thing with their kitchen. And so there's all these things that then when we get to you that we can also start talking about knife drawer inserts,
yeah.
all the special olive oil drawer pullouts and
yep.
all those things, right?
And if someone wants to just do a tune-up on their house, a lot of these inserts are available locally. And if you have a decent carpenter handyman, they not locally, but like online – Rebishelf and other companies will sell the utility inserts and knife blocks and the pullouts. And mm-hmm. a lot of it can be retrofitted if somebody wants to just do a little Marie Kondo on their kitchen,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So it's about inserts and finish out that are really the
yeah,
where you
then
get the cost.
Like, we start talking about the design of the cabinet, what we want it to look like. And, you know, there's the painted versus stained.
Yep.
And the
And depending on which way you go, they can be very similar in
yeah,
price.
Yeah, that's
know?
What I was going to say, the type of wood that you use. So
right.
if you wanted walnut versus alder. Right?
Sure, yep.
So the alder's less expensive, walnut's more. And
yep.
Just thinking about how do you decide which wood then? Is it based on how it stains?
I think it's
I'm asking you guys.
Oh, sure. It's the final color you want, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're doing a... like a blackened walnut or like mm-hmm. it's like a black wash mm-hmm. at our current project. And I really love that treatment. It's a very mm-hmm. flat, dry finish that was another thing that led me to custom cabinet factories because I blood, sweat, and tears trying to be a good finisher, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the
equipment.
Finishing of cabinets.
Oh,
is...
man, it's a whole other separate.
But someone can ruin cabinets when they paint them
a lot of
finish them.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
that's why
it's so disheartening when you see that.
Yes. Nice $2 million houses in Austin with just junky. Site-painted cabinets where the person didn't really put the time in or didn't know how to do
mm-hmm.
it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's always the heartbreaker.
Yeah. Oh. And you have moisture conditions, especially in Texas when you're in an unconditioned house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to spray them and there's no AC yet and
sticky.
It's muggy and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all seen those. I mean, and you know, interior of cabinets is typically finished like clear coat
maple, something like that.
But I know that in the old days we used to do painted interior cabinets. Mm-hmm. They actually cost more now, as I understand
they
it,
do.
To do that. So
yep.
it's kind of an upgrade. But, if they're not cured properly, they can get sticky and they can take years to dry, literally, if
sure.
they're not properly cured.
That's where the factories have, you know, they have these million-dollar Italian machines where it runs through a dryer. And the other advantage of conversion varnishes, because it's this, it's got a hardener in it and it's baked on, they can pull it out in 15 minutes.
It's like your fingernails.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not UV cured, but it's similar to like when they have those crazy lights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they paint it with a line sprayer. They're usually painted flat with a robot,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes to this machine where it circles through this gigantic kiln, basically, and then the factory guy or girl. Crystal's very interesting. There's like 60% women there.
Neat.
They have a very nice touch versus mm-hmm. a rough man for sanding and staining. Almost all of the stain
Their
stuff.
The finishes are really nice.
They
okay.
are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all
Thoughtful.
It's almost all women that do it. Yeah.
Interesting.
They have
interesting.
The detail and the kind of just something.
Yeah, there's another cabinet place we work with that the
How
women do all the finishing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
There's that. So then real quick, because this is a personal question.
Sure.
No. Between site finished and pre-finished, again, I've been in this business 25 years. So it used to be one thing and now it's another. So we used to always say site finished was the best. because we would have a very high-end, this is extremely high-end finish out on site, building, yep. putting the cabinets in place, unfinished, because the best person to touch it was our guy in the field.
Yep.
And that has flipped and changed. And now it, I mean, has it to being something that's shop
finished. The argument for doing it that way is if there's a lot of molding. So with us, we are pretty good at hiding nail holes when we're putting crown molding and trim onto cabinets, but there's a limit to that.
Interesting.
So the argument for having a very, very – there are a few very good finishers in Austin that will do it mm-hmm. almost as good as a factory finish mm-hmm. paint job. But the argument is that they can bondo all the holes and prep everything if it's more traditional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it gets all painted over, and there are no nail holes, no cracks.
That's a very good point to bring up is, you know, people – traditional cabinets, it's easier to hide flaws and things with trims versus
sure.
Super contemporary or modern cabinets. Would
right.
you agree? Yeah.
And I think – so that – with the more contemporary stuff, it's better for me to just work with pre-finished parts because we have the system down.
Mm-hmm.
That's another – we can go way back to my background. So I moved here. I did not want to start a millwork factory. You know, mm-hmm. I had a little shop and I just wanted to outsource everything,
uh-huh.
whether it's to a parts cutter or a cabinet company. But I started installing because that was kind of a blind spot of mine in the whole cabinet field.
Okay.
Interesting.
And it was also just an easy way to just jump in and make $50 an hour here. And I wasn't amazing at it. My jobs were bigger and longer. So I spent a lot of time as a custom guy making things and then some time installing it and just sort of fighting my way through it. I wasn't bad at it. I would get there in the end, but then I learned speed and efficiency and then understanding how the people that I installed for here do their blueprints and do the ordering. And it finally just – it all clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I thought, okay, now it's your turn. Now you've graduated through all these steps and now you can also sell and install cabinets.
Right.
It's interesting that you're that kind of learner. You have to do it first.
I do.
To be able to sell it, understand it.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That probably is why you're so good at what you do because you understand
each aspect. It gave me a confidence versus just, you know, BSing it.
Sure.
Right.
Not that – I got a lot of jobs that way. A lot of jobs. Because, you know, Diane comes and shows me a picture. Yeah, no problem. And then I'll go home and watch YouTube and freak out. Yeah. But I'll get there.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
I still have one. I have a freak out one that I was ruminating the whole way here.
Oh, nice. Okay. She said
just
nice.
Just breathe.
Yeah.
Just breathe. You'll be fine. Fake it till you make it.
It's a Lake Flato project that, you know, I didn't have time for but couldn't say no to.
Oh.
So
sometimes it's hard to say no to people like, you know, me and Diane.
Sure.
And Lake Flato.
You guys are on the high list.
Yeah.
You're high up on the list. There's a lot of – we've gotten so busy lately and the Instagram has worked so well that we're just kind of – flinging people away. Like,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
We just can't.
The market is nothing like we've seen, really.
No, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Even way back.
I can't wait for the 20 or 30 year view till they figure out why.
Right.
It all happened.
What's happening.
Yeah, dissect it all.
But yeah, I do think there's a bit of, you know, qualifying clients going on right now where, you know, if you're
right.
not going to behave properly.
Sure.
You can go elsewhere.
Yep.
And it's not out of any sort of greed or selfishness. It's for everybody's best interest. Honestly.
Well, and also I'd say that working with you, David, we just have confidence in you that we know the end product's going to do so well. We don't know that you're having freak out moments or anything.
With your job's not so much, but some of them, yeah. But that's how I got to here because I said yes all the time and
mm-hmm.
I took on things and just learned the hard way. And that's what the people that are maybe a little bit of a handful that we're now able to turn down or pass on to the next person, they're going to go find the me of 10 years ago and
right.
use them and abuse them. But
mm-hmm.
they hopefully the me of 10 years ago will come out the other side and
yeah.
say, I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's watch out for that experience on the next round.
You're just in a different point in your life, in your career. So I would like to talk briefly, at least a little bit, about something that comes up a lot for us, which is questions about lighting in cabinets.
Yeah.
Plug strips, you know, under cabinet lights, plug molds, things like
that. There's
also
lighting in the cabinets.
Yeah.
Yeah, plug strips set up in the cabinets. So
mm-hmm.
that tends to be what everybody, in quotes, wants these days, right?
Yep.
That's even traditional.
Well, it's really nice because you don't have plugs in your backsplash that you look at.
Right. There's a lot of solid surface box splashes now.
And mm-hmm. Or even tile ones,
like a book match. Yeah, and you just don't want to see that jarring outlet back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you spend a lot of money on your backsplash. You don't want to.
Interesting and expensive solution is TrueFig outlets or bocce, where they're hidden, kind of, or they're integrated in. Mm-hmm. It's worth Googling. It's not worth explaining
on a TrueFig.
TrueFig, it's TrueFig.
Okay.
There's one on my Instagram way back.
Okay.
It's very neat.
I think Brad sent us an image of something similar to that.
Yeah.
For a cabinet.
Yep.
So, yes, and we're dealing with that, I think, in one other area, but I thought it was maybe a little overkill. I don't know. It was a little belly button looking.
Mm-hmm. They're expensive too.
Yeah. It was a pricey.
They're
solution.
Interesting.
They're neat to do.
They are neat to do.
They are neat.
But one thing that we found, we did these TrueFig ones, and I liked, they end up flush. There's no, they don't have a cover plate. They're flush with the millwork.
Completely flush, and you can finish them however you want.
You can, however, if what happens is, like, we did a painted finish, and the builder painted them, and now they're ruined.
Yes.
Instantly. One plug prong hits it, and the paint comes right off.
Which is which is why I rejected the idea.
I would have rather left them white and be flush and go,
correct.
Oh, these are neat.
Durable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where that will end up someday. The client will get fed up with looking at this trashed
$1,000
outlet.
Right. Interesting.
So the lighting is very interesting. I've always been into it. I moved here, you know, I started remodeling my house, and I just decided I want to IKEA hack my house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put frames and make IKEA cabinets traditional, and I did it. So I have like a hybrid frameless inset weird situation, but I did it all because they have really nice organizers and they have in-drawer lights. So there's a little IR sensor, infrared sensor that can tell when the drawer's been open, and then the lights flash on and your drawer contents are lit up, and it's the best. And no one does it, but because it's easily $100 a drawer, maybe $200 for us to do it.
Uh-huh.
They're like $40 from IKEA per drawer.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can leave all your lights off and still find things in
your
kitchen.
Yep. Just watch out when you go for a midnight snack because it's very bright.
Very bright. Right.
So this is an important one I wanted to talk about. Can you talk to us about – this is where we come in oftentimes – is the importance of like going through that shop drawing process. And I know the way you guys do it is a little different than other people that at least I've worked with. So can you talk us through a little bit about that process?
Is there something we should know?
Well, I shared that already. I sent you some examples of other just frankly, it's other cabinet shop drawings that we've gotten and asked that to be incorporated. You started out at a higher level with what you sent, but it was different. Your presentations to the clients are like unbelievable. I wanted more of some of that deeper technical stuff to
bolts?
Check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, okay.
The stuff that is ugly and somebody else didn't want to see,
sure.
But I wanted to see whether or not I needed to. I just needed to see what, because I hadn't worked with you before, what that process was like.
Sure.
So can you tell us about what you gain from that process of, okay, so, you know, here's a drawing. I give you a drawing.
Yep.
And you go, oh, let me see if I understand it. Let me redraw that.
Sure.
Well, and no, they all redraw it because they're building off.
We have to make it. Yeah. You
correct.
Can, you so send
the,
us the pretty drawings.
Benefit, right.
That are kind of within reason with window spacing and center lines.
Sure.
Kind of. And then it's our job to make that perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
We're going to go check the exact center line of the sink, and the cabinet left of the sink will be 5/8 shorter than you drew it because house condition.
Yeah, I always know you guys are always checking to the 16th of an inch or maybe 32nd. Whereas we're not.
Our new lead designer was pushing back against me on having like 3/16 on drawings. She's like, why don't you just make it a quarter? I'm like, because when I was an installer and I saw 3/16 on the shop drawings from the cabinet company that sold that job, I always thought, this is custom. You know, it's very custom. And even though you have to figure out what 3/16 means in decimals or like go through the trouble of doing the math versus a quarter or a half and having a bigger filler, I like that everybody knows, like, you're getting something that is very well thought out.
You handle it differently.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Also down the line, that number can be affected if it's 3/16 versus a quarter.
Yep.
So
it adds up.
Yeah.
So that process is very helpful for me to understand that you understand what I intended.
Sure.
Does that make sense? And then you tell me, is this what you intended? Because you drew it wrong. Or maybe you misunderstood. It's a communicate. My point is it's a communication.
It's a time for clarifying things and then finding
discovery.
Hiccups.
Discovery.
You know, this is going to hit that, or this is going to interfere with that, or this is going to block this view, you know.
Right. So it's just a moment for us to look at it. It's like different disciplines look at things different ways, and you're looking at it in the way that you're looking at it in a way because you're going to be responsible to build it.
Yes.
I'm making it pretty and using the knowledge I have.
And then PM, project managers and architects really only want to see 2D drawings. You know, they're worried about where the outlet goes, how far it is down the wall or the water line for the sub-zero fridge. But I really like having a combination of 2D and 3D because it helps me get my head around it. And then it especially helps the client go, okay, I get it.
Yes. So that's
the visualize
that's,
it.
That's a very big difference to the way you do things to a lot of other people.
The software that Amanda uses is when she spat out that blue 3D rendering, I was like, oh my God, look at that. It looks just like HGTV or better, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes the homeowner really can also start to understand what it's going to look like, which really helps. I mean, I think, you know, they're trusting us and thinking, okay, this is what I'm getting. But then I think when you show them that,
I think
it
that's
really
the thing that might set me apart is this empathy for people. And like how much, when I was starting, I was like, okay, they're giving me a Honda Accord's worth of money to build their kitchen. It's 28 grand or whatever it is. And now we're in the Tesla Bentley territory. Mm-hmm. And I want them to get their money's worth, you know, in the end result and then in the kind of the process, you know.
Well, I think about that way about houses too. I mean, I know they're spending more money than they probably ever will on a product that they're buying for themselves. And so you just want to make sure it's really done well and really right.
Yeah. Your line of work is scary for me. Like it's so big. And Brad, like builders, you know, like doing a foundation and getting that wrong or, you know,
that's bad.
If you know. Mm-hmm. On every cabinet job, something's going to be off. Like we'll have a brain fart and something will be off. And so I expect that, but it's a cabinet, you know.
Yeah.
It's not
smaller.
The whole addition of a house.
But, you know, so like it's when we're doing the dimensions for a foundation, it's to an inch. They're not going to measure out 3/16.
No, probably not.
They're not even going to measure out a half.
Right.
But yet when we get to cabinets, it's down to the 3/16 or – You know, 7/32.
I had a framer yell at me for when I was very new at this. I was helping a framer and I called out, you know, 11/16. And he's like, what? What do you? It's 5/8 big. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Usually framing it's to the half inch, right? Yeah. I think it's what they go to.
The good framers now will be to the eighth, I would think.
Oh, really?
I bet you the houses that we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I try not to do that on, especially on new houses. I try to keep everything to the half.
Sure.
So one thing we haven't touched on as much, but I did mention earlier, is what's happening trend-wise with cabinet finishes. And that's where, meaning whether it's painted or stained, you mentioned the walnut, darkened walnut, blackened walnut. We're doing that quite a bit. Seems to be, I guess, on trend. I didn't realize I thought of it, but whatever.
Yep.
You started the trend.
I started that trend.
Of course you did.
These things are happening. I know sometimes what you can get comes into play, you know, as far as like, remember everybody was doing alder for so long and that went away.
And knotty alder.
Knotty alder. And, you know, we used to work in pecky cypress a lot.
Yep.
We worked down in the Florida and in the Bahamas and things.
Sure.
And just depending on what your climate is, there's all those different factors. So one thing I'm just curious, is there sort of a trend that you think that you're seeing besides is the reeded door the thing that you're seeing these days that's super?
Reeded door and radius work.
Okay, yeah. That's a big deal. These
so radius work, meaning like curved
cabinets, curved end pieces.
Yep.
Curved
it's so
details.
Exciting. It's like the 1930s.
It is.
Yeah, when done well, it's great.
Yeah.
We have a lot coming up.
And, really? Wow, know, cool.
Crystal's very good at it, but we have some that I'm now figuring out how to do it myself.
I did it in 2018 on my house, just saying. I started that trend too. It's a joke. Is there anything
flatter finishes are very trendy?
Flat, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The sheen level is going down. Mm-hmm. It was satin, but then now there's like really flat. The ultramatte finishes, the lacquered stuff or the panelized stuff. Mm-hmm. And then white oak is super popular and it wants to turn yellow. And no designer wants yellowed white oak because they're having flashbacks
so they put
of
whitewash
red.
On it. Mm-hmm. Yep. They put white finishes. Yep.
And they'll flatten it. And so you kind of want it to look like a sheet of white oak that came off of the deck.
Right.
And was just not touched. That's what the end game is.
Yeah.
And you're going through all this trouble to stain it.
To make
and
it look
seal
naked.
It. Yep.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And make it be fixed in time and not changeable.
Sure.
So you don't want it to yellow over time
yep.
or change color.
That's another
but it's
thing.
A living
and
finish.
It does. It won't yellow like regular natural white oak would, but walnut is one where it's so pretty when it's brand new and in a week in the sun, it goes orange real quick.
Yeah, it can change for sure.
Mm-hmm. So you have to put a sealer on it or what do you do?
You just need people to know, you know. I think most...
Don't put this cabinet in the sun.
Well...
Just be okay with living finishes.
Be okay with it. This,
okay
I
with
always show
finishes.
People my two-year-old walnut doors.
Uh-huh. Like,
this is what you're going to get, mm-hmm. not this.
Mm-hmm.
The
okay.
one that comes out of the box has this nice grayish color
warmer.
To it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Gets warmer and richer. That's how I say that.
That's,
it gets warmer
that's
and richer.
Probably what
time.
I should say
Pick
instead
of
going
kind
of
like
orange.
Copper, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Don't say orange.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Is there anything else we want to cover, Diane?
Yeah.
Do you have any final questions? We're so happy you joined us today. We're so
incredibly
impressed with your work. That's why we wanted you here. Plus, we like your
attitude. Love all
your attitude.
Level of detail and
good,
appreciate
bad,
it.
And otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate
fun to work with.
Working with people that don't scream and yell and say things like, this is unacceptable. It's called the PETA tax, that if you have one of those, pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm. What is it called?
PITA, PETA. That's our internal
pain
nomenclature
in
for certain people.
Tax.
I like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to say to these people that are listening that you want them to watch out for? Any last words? You don't have to have them if you don't. But
if you're remodeling or building a new house, it's just so relationship driven. You know, you have to be friends with these people within reason. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've worked with all different types of personality, especially as an installer. I dealt with so many different types of project managers, and they would all kind of get a grade within a couple of hours. Some of them were definitely Fs,
yeah.
You know. But Austin's a small town, so I try and keep the gossiping to a minimum.
Yeah.
But there's certain people that they run their ship with fear and just tension, you know. And there's other people that kind of go, all right, we have a problem.
We're going to solve it.
Let's solve
together.
It. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
okay.
Most of the higher end builders have the money to pay for those types of project managers with the right kind of mindset and kind of a cool head.
Yeah, I think that I love that you said that because it's so relationship oriented.
Yeah.
So much of our value, all of us sitting here, is in who we know, what we've done, and how we've learned, and about. We know who to ask if we don't have the answers and coming to clients with solutions. So we've really appreciated that about working with you.
Great.
Yeah. And I mean, we always work with builders that don't yell and freak out and because that doesn't help anyone.
Yeah.
Unflappable is what we want.
Right.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks,
thank
David.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.